First of all, defenestration is a good biblical custom. All right, just so you're aware of that, you may want to note the reference down in case you want to either write a liturgy somehow for that. Who was defenestrated? No, that would... you'd use a middle voice for that. He did that to himself. Jezebel, there you are. Jezebel, here we are. Second Kings chapter 9. Then Jehu went to Jezreel. When Jezebel heard about it, she painted her eyes, arranged her hair, and looked out of a window. As Jehu entered the gate, she asked, "Have you come in peace, Zimri, you murderer of your master?" He looked up at the window and called out, "Who is on my side? Who?" Two or three eunuchs looked down at him. "Throw her down," Jehu said. So they threw her down, and some of her blood splattered the wall and horses as they trampled her underfoot. There is the biblical precedent for a sanctified defenestration. We are looking at Jeremiah. Chapter 1, marvelous, gorgeous piece, and also very simple as far as the grammar is concerned. The Hebrew reads very easily, and it's just packed with powerful meaning. Jeremiah 1, 4 to 10, call of Jeremiah. Jeremiah 4, and the word of Yahweh was, or we would in English say came, to me, quote Mark. Baterem, in before, literally, in before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And in before you emerged from the womb, I had consecrated you. A prophet to the nations, I gave you. All right, let's go back at a few of those verbs. The first verb, actually, second word in verse 5, you can see by the textual note is kind of contested here. In fact, what you have in the text itself is the kare, and you notice the wow doesn't even have a vowel with it, which is to say when you read it, you ignore that. You pretend it's not there. Whereas down in the footnote, you have the kathiv, that is, how it should be pointed as the consonants are given. In reality, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the meaning of the two. It's likely just a different root. The root above in the verse up above as we have it, the root is yatsar, which is the word for form. It's the word that's used of a potter in Jeremiah 18, making pottery. And it's the word that therefore is used by extension to refer to creation. All right? God formed Adam out of the dust of the ground. The word down below is out of the root tzur, which there are several different roots tzur, but one of them is basically cognate to yatsar. The other thing that's interesting here, grammatically, if you look at the second word in this clause and the second word in the next clause, tetze, you notice that both of these are imperfects, even though we translate them as past. Which is to say, what is happening here is that the last word in each phrase, that is a perfect, and that refers to what was past, and you're kind of putting yourself in the position of that time frame and saying, before we got to that, you know, before you were born, I knew you. I knew you already before. Okay, I knew you, then you were born. And to reflect the difference in time gap there, the imperfect is used for the first one, even though it is it's a past tense. It's something that already happened. All right, before I formed you, I knew you. Note the emphasis in this verse on the pronoun I. Before I formed you, I knew you. Before you emerged from the womb, I consecrated you, I made you, or appointed you, or literally gave you as a prophet to the nations. those three words, new, consecrated, gave, or new, really need to be put together and made one package, and it's a marvelous package. And given the nature of Hebrew poetry, it is fair game to use any one of those to help explain the others, because they are set in parallelism. That's just fair game. It was put together that way. And the word know gives the special flavor of relationship, an intimate, ongoing, long-term relationship. The word consecrated is to say that God set Jeremiah apart, a special election word, and God set him apart for Yahweh's service. And the third word, grammatically, can be translated made. I made you a prophet to the nations. There's an alternate word that could have been used for made, which is to say the fact that he used Nathan here. I'm thinking we really ought to hang on to that sense of gift. I gifted you as a prophet to the nations, a sense that Jeremiah has a relationship with the nations, which is not just something imposed on them, but something given, something bestowed to them. All right, all of this happened before Jeremiah was even born, before he emerged. There was no day that Jeremiah was not a prophet. He may not have known it, but there was no day when he was not at Yahweh's service. That is just overwhelmingly the message here. Verse 6, and I said, you see by the pointing there that the aleph of the first person singular and the aleph of the verbal root are conflated here. And I said, aha, Lord Yahweh, behold, I don't know to speak, for I am just a kid. One little bit of textual interest here. Look at the pointing of the word Yahweh in verse 4. Okay, there's a Shua and there's a comments, right? Look at the pointing of Yahweh, the fourth word in verse 6. There's a Shua and a Kirik. Why? Elohim. All right, this is the Kathiv Karei thing. When you have it pointed as you have up in verse 4, Yahweh, Adonai is the way it would be read. That's the clue to the reader. When you see these words, you read Adonai. In verse 6, however, the word Yahweh is preceded by the word Adonai, and therefore you don't say it twice. That way you lose the sense, you know, Adonai loses its substance there. And therefore, when you have this combination, and it occurs fairly often in the scriptures, the clue is here, you read Adonai Elohim. Okay? No text note on that, but people who grow up knowing the scriptures and among Jewish people, they'd pick up on this immediately. All right, and I said, aha, which is to say, oh, God forbid, far be it from Yahweh, the Lord God, behold, I do not know. I think this stands consciously over against the I know you up above in verse 5. And there's an interesting interplay between what Yahweh knows and what Jeremiah knows, or doesn't know. Yahweh knows, Jeremiah doesn't know. And Yahweh knows him, and Jeremiah doesn't even know what that means yet to be his. And he's just at the initial stage of the relationship. I don't know how to speak. Kind of sounds like Moses. Moses had the same concern. Because I'm just a kid. And the word kid here, na'ar, really refers to something that's not adult, basically. And it can refer to something all the way from an infant, like Moses in that basket on the Nile, to the armor bearer of some of the kings later on in the historical section. So the emphasis is not on a specific age or a specific ability. Simply, he has not reached his maturity yet. I don't know how to speak because I'm too young for that. And Yahweh said to me, don't bother saying, I am a child. Four, upon whatever I send you, concerning whatever I send you, you shall go. So we change the above to a directional. Wherever I send you, you shall go. And whatever I command you, you shall speak. This do not say, I think we need to understand that probably not as a real harsh prohibition, as though there's something terribly sinful about saying I'm just a kid. I think the point is, Jeremiah, it's an irrelevant factor here. Whether you're a kid or whether you're an adult, neither one qualifies you for being a prophet. Neither one disqualifies you from being a prophet, because what's involved is not you in the first place. It's me. And so I think it's not quite as harsh a thing as the strong low prohibition would be. Don't bother mouthing the words. I'm a child. Four. And notice the inclusiveness of the next phrases. Nothing excluded. Whatever, wherever I send you, wherever it may be, wherever I send you, you shall go. Whatever I command you, you shall speak. Absolutely no indication of details here. Kind of like that bald follow me that Jesus issued to the disciples, right? No indication of when, where, how long, what good, any of those kinds of things. What if? Follow me. And the important word in follow me is the word me. And same here. But, and again, just reminiscent of Abraham. Go, leave your father's house and so on and so on. Go to the land I'll show you. No clue where that land would be. Just go. There is that theme through the scriptures of that absolute claim of God on his people. You're mine. Whatever I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid, al tira, of their faces, of them. For it ka ani, one of the most lovely phrases in the Bible, I am with you to deliver you. Hifil infinitive from natzal with a pronominal suffix. Al tira is a phrase that occurs most often in the context of the holy war, when Yahweh marshals his troops in order to face the enemy, the charge that's given is, don't be afraid. You're afraid, you're out of here. Don't need you, you're dismissed. Don't be afraid, which is the obverse side of what Paul in the New Testament puts such emphasis on, namely faith. Or trust. That is the form of trust in that kind of situation. Don't be afraid. Why? I am with you. Again, another bald statement. There's absolutely nothing measurable, nothing tangible, nothing observable about this. But that's all there is. I am with you. Emmanuel is the promise. I am with you to deliver you. That is to say, the salvation, and the only salvation that Jeremiah has to count on, is Yahweh's promise. I will be with you. Says Yahweh. And Yahweh sent his hand, and the word here, naga, ranges from to reach or to touch, and sometimes used in a negative or a kind of a harsh sense, to smash or to smack, to hit. That's not the sense here, clearly. He reached out his hand, he touched my mouth, and Yahweh said to me, behold, I have given or placed my words in your mouth. That Nathan clearly echoes what we had up in verse 5. Jeremiah is given as a prophet to the nations. What is it that qualifies a person as a prophet? The gift of the words. The words that form also part of the Davar up in verse 4. The word of God came to me. And it's an interesting progression that's here. The word first comes to Jeremiah, right? And then the word is placed into the mouth of Jeremiah, the word to Jeremiah, the word in Jeremiah, so that the word can come from Jeremiah. And without those first two, the third one ends up being false prophecy, just empty. The first two are key. And this is given him so that he knows that he is sent by God on a mission. Shalach probably needs to be highlighted too. Send. That's the word that in the New Testament forms the basis of apostolos, the apostle. And we have an Old Testament counterpart to the sent one from the New Testament. That is the prophetic test. That's it. That is the key verb. Okay. Touch my mouth. Behold, verse 10. I have appointed you. That's almost a royal verb, a verb that describes what a king does for his servants. This day upon nations and kingdoms in order to pluck up and to pull down, to destroy, to overthrow, to build up, and to plant. And that set of verbs is interesting partly because of the parallelism that's there. The first two are negatives, the last two are positives, but form a pair with the first two. And the third and fourth are kind of unconnected there. What is also interesting about them is that 1, 2, 3, 4 are the heavy words. 5 and 6 are the good words, law words, gospel words, and reflect well Jeremiah's ministry, most of which was spent in speaking judgment, the last little bit spent speaking also words of promise beyond the exile. So even in the way they're put together here, the way they're weighted, they're very descriptive. And beyond that, anywhere else these words occur in the book of Jeremiah, they always occur as what Yahweh will do. Yahweh will tear down and he will overthrow and plant and build, which is to say that what God is doing with Jeremiah here is kind of bringing Jeremiah into Yahweh's mission. So that what Jeremiah does is really not Jeremiah's task at all. It's really what Yahweh is after in the world through Jeremiah. Marvelous stuff. And there's a lot here in the Epiphany season to speak about the mission that God gives his people out there. Not that all of us have the same experience of having been touched as a prophet like Jeremiah. However, the sense that we have also, that the word has reached us, that word that became flesh, that word has reached us and has entered us in order that that word can come through us to reach people around us. I think the other emphasis that is a strong one in this section is that Jeremiah has his ministry within the context of the ministry or the mission of God for all nations, all peoples, everywhere out there, and Jeremiah's is just one part of that, as ours. None of us has it all. None of us is in control of it all. None of us can take responsibility for even for our part in that. Yahweh will take care of that. Our part, together with the part of every other creature, every other person that God calls, forms that greater mission of God, which, God tells Jeremiah here, was meant for the nations and the kingdoms, which is to say that mission has a universality as wide as the sovereignty and the creative power of God itself. And it's not limited just to some people. Rich stuff. I hope you make the effort. This is one of the more preachable texts from the Old Testament. Hope you make the effort to work on it. It's really a good one. Really great for young people's groups as well. Thank you.